Welcome back to The Takeaway. It's Todd Zwillick. And now our ongoing coverage of the crisis of opioid addiction and death in America. We look today at how words carry huge weight for people struggling with addiction. Last month, I spoke with an addiction recovery activist named Ryan Hampton. He's been in recovery from heroin addiction for more than 3 years. And he had this to say about the idea of drug addicts.
This is really important to me. I do want to make it clear. I actually identify as a person in sustained recovery, especially when I'm talking to folks on the radio and outside of my own personal recovery community. And that's an important distinction for me because I believe that for a very long time, the media and the culture has called us addicts, and it has stigmatized us. It has put us into this box. I am so much more than an addict today.
Well, that stigma that Ryan Hampton is talking about there, it isn't just about hurt feelings or political correctness. Research now shows that words like addict or junkie or abuser can affect the treatment that they receive and even influence how willing someone is to get into treatment in the first place. John F. Kelly is associate professor of psychiatry in the field of addiction medicine at Harvard Medical School. In 2010, he did research testing two different ways of referring to someone dealing with addiction in a medical setting, and he found that if someone was referred to as a substance abuser,
what it tends to do is it tends to make people think about that person differently, more punitively, more negatively, that they're engaging in willful misconduct.
But if they were identified as having a substance abuse disorder,
they're more likely to be viewed in a medical context, that there is something gone awry with their neurobiology, which is in fact true, that leads to greater perceptions of treatment need as opposed to punishment.
Okay, so John Kelly there at Harvard Medical School, explain those findings for us. How did you interpret what you found? Why such a big difference between the two?
Well, yes, we did find a difference. And this is something that is somewhat surprising, how language actually can make a difference to people's attitudes and perceptions about these very common health conditions. So we actually used a vignette to describe someone in a drug court situation. So they were involved with the criminal justice system in this particular scenario. And in half the vignettes, they were described as having a substance use disorder. In the other half, they were described as being a substance abuser. Otherwise, the story was identical. And these vignettes were randomly assigned to doctoral level. So these were MD, PhDs in the mental health and addiction field. And what we found was at random, when people were exposed to the substance abuser term, they were much more likely to view the exact same person more punitively and less in need of treatment, more to blame and should be more ostracized.
More to blame and more ostracized. What does that mean for, let's say, the physician who's seeing that person or even the judge?
So, yeah, I mean, don't forget, I think it's important to recognize that our language and the terms we use both reflect but also influence our attitudes. And I think this is what has come up in this research, is that we can actually induce biases by using certain terms. So what this means for clinical care and care in the criminal justice system, which is increasingly being used in the face of the opioid epidemic, the so-called drug courts to help people get treatment that they need, is that we need to be very careful about the kinds of terms that we use to ensure that we use terminology that is consistent with what we've learned in the last 25 years in relation to our understanding of the neurological impact of substances on the brain.
But Dr. Kelly, is this just an issue of sensitivity to people in recovery, or are you saying that this can have a direct impact on the treatment they receive or on their medical care?
We don't know whether it will have a direct impact on medical care, but what we do know is that using certain terms, like calling someone a drug abuser, does induce these implicit cognitive biases, which make people more likely to view that person in a negative light, more punitively, which could result in a greater likelihood that that person would get ineffective prison time or jail time as opposed to treatment for the disorder, which may be driving the criminal activity. So it's a very inefficient and ineffective way to deal with it. And I think we need to use language that is more commensurate and in tune with what we have found out about the nature of these disorders over the last 25 years. That is to say that these disorders are really a disease that affects the brain neurocircuitry, that affects the ability of people to control those impulses to use drugs. So we've got a disorder for sure. We now know the nature of the disorder, that it affects the brain, and we need to use language that really reflects that.
So how are you proposing that we get it right in terms of the language that we use?
Great question. I think that we need to use terminology that reflects a disorder. So now the American Psychiatric Association, for example, has adopted language like substance use disorder, which now is the language that is used in our diagnostic system. And this is happening all over the United States and all around the world, that we are letting go of terminology which implies willful misconduct, that is to say, calling someone a drug abuser or a substance abuser or an alcohol abuser, in favor of language that reflects a disorder. So using language like alcohol use disorder or drug use disorder. I think it's very important also to recognize that, you know, when we think about other common disorders, which in some ways are first cousins to substance use disorders, like eating disorders, you know, we uniformly refer to people with eating-related problems as having an eating disorder, never as food abusers. And yet, we describe people with substance-related conditions and problems as substance abusers and as not as having a substance use disorder. And that is changing. And I think part of the reason for that is just our cultural attitude for the last 50 years has been around this idea of willful misconduct when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. For sure, there is an initial choice, but what we now know is that our genetics, our biology, and the kind of life course that happens can actually increase or decrease the likelihood that someone would actually become addicted.
Now, Dr. Kelly, I read that you've actually come up with something you call an addictionary that judges or law enforcement officials or even doctors can read that has different terms referring to drug use here that you think can take the culture in a different direction.
Yes, we have developed an addictionary, which is online at recoveryanswers.org. It's now been taken up by the national advocacy organization Facing Addiction in an attempt to try and standardize our language around addiction. So if we can create an addictionary that people can go to, can look it up, you know, what are the right terms, what do those terms mean, why should we use certain terms and not others, it's all there in that particular glossary called the addictionary. I think if we want addiction destigmatized, we need a language that is unified and that also reflects the true nature of what we're dealing with.
And John Kelly, before I let you go, are you convinced that this change in language can really take the culture of addiction treatment in a different direction in this country? Are you convinced that it can change the national psyche when it comes to addiction?
Yes, I am. As I mentioned, I think our language is powerful. It not only reflects but influences our approaches. And I think we need language and terminology that was more consistent with what we've learned. I think what we have found in our research is that when we do use language that is more consistent with medical facts, we tend to reduce stigma. And that's only a good thing in terms of people accessing treatment that they need that can save lives.
John F. Kelly, professor of psychiatry and addiction medicine at Harvard and the founder of the Recovery Research Institute. You can find it at recoveryanswers.org. John F. Kelly, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.